How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 68 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're on that page also. And you can find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, like always now, Monday through Friday. Going to do a mailbag today. Quite honestly, we've had, 5 days now of no actual basketball games played. Two more. Opening day in two nights, Wednesday night in Philadelphia. October 26th. We're finally going to have real basketball, like basketball that matters. It's an incredible thing. It's an amazing thing. We're going to have actual basketball. So I don't know what the heck to tell you guys at this point. Monday afternoon, maybe for all we know, if the Thunder make, I'm recording this late Sunday night. Maybe if the Thunder make, you know, a really early morning move or something. By the time you listen to this, the Thunder will have already made a move in terms of getting their roster down. They're at 19 right now. They got to get down to 15. The deadline's at 4 p.m. Central Time when you got to get down to 15 by on Monday. So that's going to be a story on Monday. That's something that I'll talk about on Tuesday morning's podcast for sure. I'm going to do some predictions on who might be gone in this podcast once I get to that question. But all mailbag today, so let's get started. From John on Twitter, why do some players like Reggie Jackson bristle at the idea of being a six-man in a Harden-type role? You get to play a ton of minutes and still can get royally paid. Seems like the smart thing to do with Oladipo. Well, I'll take exception with saying it's a smart thing to do with Oladipo. When the Thunder first traded for Victor Oladipo on draft night back in June, I thought they could make him into a six-man. I thought that could be the right move. That was also when I thought Kevin Durant was going to be coming back. With Kevin Durant there, Oladipo's a guy who's better with the ball in his hands than, you know, as a spacer or as a shooter without the ball in his hands. And I kind of thought he'd work really well, even if he is the best shooting guard in the roster. You know, you want the ball to be in Durant's hands or in Russell Westbrook's hands the most. And Andre Robertson makes sense defensively out there. So start him at the two and you bring Oladipo off the bench and just give him, you know, starter minutes off the bench, but play him with the bench and you're fine. I don't think that way now. I think they need, I don't know who you'd put in the starting lineup over him. I mean, Abrines is a rookie. Morrow is inconsistent on the defensive end. Oladipo is a better defensive player than Morrow is probably a better defensive player than Abrines right now. And can just contribute in so many different ways offensively that I think you need him in that starting lineup, and a lineup that's going to struggle offensively. Now I think you stagger Westbrook and Oladipo. You can treat Oladipo like teams treated shooting guards like that before. Like, what's a good example is the way that the Indiana Pacers a few years ago used to use Lance Stephenson. He was a starter, but they almost treated him like a bench player. Lance Stephenson would start games. He'd come out around the 6 minute mark. He'd sit on the bench until starters would come out. He'd come in. He'd run the bench unit, basically just be the facilitator for the second unit. You know, that's kind of what the Thunder did in the first halves when Donovan was running real rotations in those final two exhibition games. That's kind of what happened. Why do players not like the idea of being a six man? I mean, when they're good, why wouldn't you want to have your own team? They're competitive. Look, I think there are better and worse ways of going about it. I don't think you ever want to be labeled as disgruntled or being a jerk about that kind of stuff. And there are certain things that cross lines, and you don't want to mess up locker room chemistry or anything like that. But if you're good, like Reggie Jackson was aggressive about it, but at least he backs it up. Reggie Jackson is a good, now he's hurt now, but he's an above average starting point guard, no question, here in the money that he got. James Harden, I mean, same thing. But you're also not, from a monetary perspective, like, I don't agree with the statement of you can still get royally paid. Like, yeah, you can get royally paid compared to someone who doesn't play in the NBA. But if you get your, you know, profile starting, then and you excel as a starter on a good team, you're a lot more likely to get paid than if you excel as a sixth man. There's no question about that. You know, if you excel in a bigger role, in a more prominent role, then you're going to get paid for that role as opposed for a sixth man role. So, I mean, you can get paid a lot as a sixth man, but, I mean, there aren't people necessarily throwing out max contracts to guys in order to make them sixth men. You know, Enes Kanter got a big contract, not a max. What was a big contract at the time, what is relatively a less contract now in this current cap environment. And he's coming off the bench. And there are some other guys who've gotten big money this offseason in this, you know, in this new environment with just tons of money being thrown around, whether it's, you know, Allen Crabbe and Evan Turner in Portland and Bismack Biyombo, who will probably come off the bench in Orlando, and some other guys. But you know, I think it's hard to say that a guy is still going to get paid just as much when he's coming off the bench. I don't know if I buy that. From Jared Magnuson, I believe I saw a Westbrook, Robertson, Hustis, Adams, Kanter lineup the other night. Chances that lineup is used this year. I feel it can be effective at times. Strong defense, and it can punish teams around the boards. Obviously, it can't really shoot, but it's intriguing. Yeah, it's intriguing. I mean, it can definitely kill you on the boards. I mean, Robertson is a really good rebounding wing. Westbrook is obviously as good a rebounding point guard as you're going to find in the league. Kanter and Adams can punish guys, and Hustis is pretty good as a rebounding three. No, you can't shoot. The thing that I find intriguing about Hustis is just the fact that he's a wing who can maybe protect the rim a little bit. Just allows for flexibility, and I think when you pair him and Adams together, the way that those two can sandwich Kanter on the defensive end can kind of help. I think he can maybe compensate for some of that. Now, Kanter, you can also station a little farther from the rim. I don't know if you want to do that all the time because it in some ways negates what's arguably his best offensive skill, which is his offensive rebounding. And the more he drifts from the rim, the less of an offensive rebounder he's going to be. And that's going to be an interesting line to tread. You know, maybe if you do station him more from the rim, though, he chases fewer offensive rebounds and then just kind of out of natural tendencies. And then because of that, he's a better transition defender, which is something that he really hurts teams on transition defense a lot of the time. When he chases those offensive rebounds, he goes the opposite direction of, you know, a team running in transition when he's going for that rebound. And guys get 5-on-4s, 4-on-3s, you know what, 5-on-3s sometimes, or 4-on-1s, or whatever the heck they are. And a lot of that is because of the chaos that's provided when a guy runs in the wrong direction. Maybe he chases fewer of those, and maybe that helps the team in the long term. Stationing him a little bit further from the basket, it prevents him from doing some of that stuff. I don't know. But they have guys who will rebound in that lineup. I'm intrigued, but I think intrigued is a good word. I would be intrigued at that lineup with Oladipo instead of Westbrook. Now, obviously, Westbrook is the best player out there, but from a complimentary standpoint, that's kind of a bench lineup. If you have Oladipo out there, Oladipo running things, or even if you have, like, if you have that lineup and you mix it up a little bit, so you have Oladipo and Price replacing Hustis and Westbrook, Price at the one, Oladipo at the two, and Robertson shifts over to the three, so you still have that defense and rebounding on the wing from Robertson. You still get some defense from Price, and you still get some okay off-ball defense, or off-guard defense from Victor Oladipo, and Oladipo runs things, and you get a little bit more shooting with Oladipo in there, and I think that's like a realistic second-unit lineup, too, that they could legitimately run. If you want to play Adams with the second lineup at all, which is something that I don't know if we're consistently going to see it, but it's something that is a possibility. Like I could see that conceivably happening. So yeah, I'm all for all of these kind of funky lineup configurations. I think Billy Donovan's going to have a lot to struggle with just to find lineups that work, because they have a lot of guys who are offense only or defense only players, a lot of one way players, and because of that, he's going to struggle to balance lineups. There are going to be some, you know, like you just said, like Jared just said, I should say, you're going to have some lines where you're like, oh, that could be good rebounding, but man, how are they going to shoot? Or, oh, that could be pretty good defensively, but how are they going to score? Or, oh, that one's probably going to score well, but how are they going to defend? I mean, Billy Donovan's going to be interesting to see how he tries to balance lineups. That's why I think he's going to play a lot of lineups. I've said on this podcast before, my weird niche bold prediction is that Billy Donovan plays more lineups than any other coach in the league this year. I really think that's possible. That's one of the reasons why From Jess NZ. Has Ennis Cantor taught Stephen Ennis things? And has Stephen taught Ennis Stephen things? Could they have been who they are without each other? I like this question. It's funny because Cantor is, you know, this amazing offensive player, right? You know, he's this guy who came into the league and has just always been, and has gotten better, has really gotten better. You know, I said on the podcast, or I should say I said in an article over the weekend, a scout told me that Steven Adams, he thinks Steven Adams is now a top five center on both sides of the ball. A scout also told me that he thinks that Ennis Cantor is, and this is his phrasing, not that far behind DeMarcus Cousins offensively right now. That's kind of amazing. I mean, when I asked why, it was just described that the shot seems more reliable. The post moves are all there. And that was just as kind of a scorer was the intent of that. Not an overall player, not as a passer, not as a, you know, just kind of as a scorer, not that far behind DeMarcus Cousins right now. When you think about it, I mean, I think you can make a really good case for Cantor being a top five offensive center, a top five scoring center, I should say, in the league. I think that's fair, along with, you know, probably Towns will be there and Brook Lopez will be there. Obviously Cousins, of course, who I just said, and, you know, maybe there's cases for one or two other guys, but I think you can make that case as just the best scoring centers, the most dominant scoring centers. I think Cantor's in there, and Adam, you know, he struggles on defense in a lot of different ways. And Adams was the other way when he first came in, right? All defense and rim protection and defensive awareness and intelligence and kind of raw on the defensive end without skill. And they work together all the time. Like, you walk into a practice, those guys are always together. Their relationship, like, you know, people say, you know, our relationship extends off the court. But we know that Adams and Cantor have the off-court relationship. Like, we see the tweets and, you know, whatever else is there and the ridiculous stunts they have that make us all laugh. But, like, for them, it's almost like the relationship extends onto the court. They're working together all the time. They do their three-point contests. They do drills together. Cantor has talked about a lot about how Adams is always trying to help him on defense. And how he's always trying to help Adams on offense. And it's funny to hear Cantor talk about Adams, because, like, he just, they really talk. They talk like brothers, you know. They talk, they jab at each other, they make fun of each other, and then you ask them for, like, an honest opinion, and they just give these glowing reviews of each other. They're incredibly supportive of each other in kind of that evolution process, and they're both trying to evolve on opposite sides of the ball. So I do think the compliments work well together as personalities, obviously, and kind of as players in terms of trying to help each other develop. And yeah, big men work together in general in practice. You go over and you see the big men working together, but Cantor and Adams are guys who do those one-on-one workouts together all the time. And yeah, I think there's something to that. When your really close friend is good at something you're not, and you know, you want to learn, It's an intuitive exchange of services right there. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. From She's for OKC, based on roster being 19 guys currently, who do you think is going to be traded or released by the end of October? So like I said, the deadline is Monday at 4 p.m. Central Time. So by the time you listen to this, they may have already made their cuts. If you want to follow that information, you can follow me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. As soon as I find out, I will tell you guys what the information is. I'll always let you know. Although I am on a flight to Philadelphia. I'm going to Philly for the opener a little bit early. So I'm on a flight to Philadelphia. I so intelligently booked the flight at 4 p.m. So like at the exact deadline, I have a 3:57 flight. And once my connecting flight lands, I'll be able to check stuff. And I will probably buy internet in the air just to make sure that I get on everything okay. But if the internet is not necessarily tweetable or writable, then I'll get you as soon as I land. I promise I will. So 19 guys. Let's make some predictions. I wrote an article. It's up on normantranscript.com, by the way. I wrote it over the weekend. Just some predictions for what could happen. So they're at 19. They've already released Caruso. Sandra Drew Williams released him in like 48 hours, right? So that's how they got from 20 to 19. Caleb Tarzewski and Chris Wright are the next intuitive ones to go. That gets you to 17 right there. Both those guys non-guaranteed. And then there's Samaje Christen, $534,000, but only $200,000 guaranteed. He could go, and then I imagine it's going to be Mitch McGarry. Mitch McGarry is the second cheapest guy on this roster in base salary. Huestis is the cheapest, but, you know, Huestis, I think, you know, he's got one less year because he started his rookie contract a year late, even though he was the same draft as McGarry. He did that one year in the D League. So last year was his first actual NBA season. That's when he started the rookie contract. So Houston, you can pick up a third year option on him. You're fine. McGarry's got the 15 game suspension. He's got the conditioning issues. I think he's kind of unfortunate. It's unfortunate for Mitch, but I think he's going to end up being the one to go. You could conceivably trade Samaje Kristen. I think that's possible. I think he seems to me like he's an NBA player. And I have spoken to scouts, multiple scouts, who seem to be varying degrees of high on him. I had one person or two people tell me that they think that he's not a third string point guard today. He's a backup quality point guard today. I had a couple more tell me that they think he's a third string guy. But either way, that means he's an NBA player. And there are teams who want 23-year-olds who are NBA players. And maybe if they think he's a third stringer now, you know, maybe somebody thinks he'll be a backup in the future even. So maybe there's some value there. They bought a pick so that they could draft him. They use resources to stick him in the D League. You know, they brought him in this year. They're giving him $200,000. That's resources spent. So I'm sure for the Thunder, one of their goals would be to try to snag some value back if they can. If not, then, you know, he could be released. And then, you know, look for him to probably sign somewhere with someone in the league for, you know, some kind of, you know, similar contract, I guess. One more thing to consider on Kristen, even if a team does value him as, say, a third point guard, something that you have to take into account is the fact that teams know that the Thunder have to waive him if they can't trade him. So it's hard to imagine, you know, even if a team probably isn't going to look at this and say, oh, let's give up a first for him anyway. I mean, I don't think that's a realistic thing. But even if the Thunder are trying to get back a second round pick, which you know, they then drafted Kristen with, so maybe you could argue it's a net, you know, a net neutral situation for them. The issue comes to teams aren't going to want to necessarily give somebody up who they think, heck, we just waited out. We can probably just sign him in free agency. On top of that, a lot of these teams have already made their cuts. They've gotten down to 15. They might have a guy on their bench that they like. They've already told they made the team. They're wondering, is it really worth it to make that change for a third string point guard? There are teams out there that I can imagine might be somebody that would be a nice fit for him, and I think he would end up somewhere, but I see it making more sense on waivers than I do in a trade. But that being said, you know, like I always say, Sam Presti's smarter than I am, and there are certain ways that you can probably try to work something out there and maybe get a little bit back, but it's just going to be a little harder to maneuver that deal when teams know, okay, if we don't give up anything for him, that we're going to have an opportunity to try to sign him in general once he gets waived. But I don't know exactly how that's going to go. But then if Kristen goes and McGarry goes, then that's how you get down to 15. For those who say, you know, you can waive Ronnie Price, I don't think so. I don't see that being a possibility. First of all, you can't trade Ronnie Price. Ronnie Price is under a no trade. Since he signed this summer, he's under a no trade restriction until December 15th. So he can't be traded till the middle of December. So that's out of the question. The only way to get rid of him is to waive him. They signed up to a two-year deal. It's too late to stretch this year's deal. Stretching is when you spread out a guy's salary over a number of years upon waiving him. So if they were going to stretch him, they would have to waive him, pay him his full salary for this year, which is about $2.6 million, a little bit less. I think it's $2.55 or something like that, $2.56. They'd have to pay him all that in one amount. And then the cap number for next year, which was about $2.4 million, would be spread out over 3 years to a little bit over $800,000 in 2017, 2018, 2019. And that would come off the Thunder's books, 2017, 2018, 2019. That would be a cap number for them, not necessarily what they're paying him. They're paying him his full salary next year. But the cap number that comes out to, it would be $800,000-ish, a little bit more than that dollar cap hit. I don't see them wanting to incur cap hits of Ronnie Price for 4 years, even if they're small. And then paying him $2.5 million this year, $2.6 million this year to not play for them when they just signed him. A lot of his value comes off the court. That was something they knew coming into it. You know, he's more valuable, I think, as a third point guard than he is as a second because of his veteran leadership, his mentorship, the way he can help Cameron Payne, the way he can help in the locker room. That was a big reason why I think teams are attracted to Ronnie Price, especially young teams. So I think Ronnie Price is going to be someone who's going to stay. I know a lot of people are asking about Price versus Kristen. Just financially, I just think Price makes more sense, but we'll see what happens. From Nate, from an eye test, Cantor seems a little better defensively when Adams is in. Is that backed up statistically, or am I making that up? You know, I thought kind of the same thing, but I've never actually looked it up. So I looked it up, and the Thunder actually have an identical defensive efficiency. Defensive efficiency is points allowed per 100 possessions. The Thunder actually have an identical defensive efficiency when Cantor is on the floor with Adams and when Cantor is on the floor without Adams. The difference is 1/10 of a point per 100 possessions. I mean, it's nothing. It's identical. That was last season, last regular season. Small sample size, because they didn't do it a lot. It was in like 200 minutes. I forget the number. Should have written that down. I think it was like 200 minutes or something like that that they played together. So it's not huge. Spread out over a number of different games. Those numbers are noisy as hell. Those numbers are crazy noisy. I don't think they mean that much. I mean, do the statistics back it up? No, the statistics don't back it up, but I don't think the statistics necessarily matter, which is why I say after I give the statistics, right? I think Cantor is definitely better with Adams on the floor, but I think everybody is better with Adams on the floor. I think he just directs people really well. He's a really good help defender, so he kind of cleans up mistakes really well. So I do think Adams is better, or Cantor is better with Adams on the floor defensively. I also think that's true for everybody. I don't know if it's disproportionately true or not with Cantor. I honestly don't know. I think it's a valid point because there are times when I notice things that Cantor does and I'm like, oh, that wasn't bad. That was okay. That was better than your normal Enes Kanter defense. But I don't know if that's just because Adams does that with a lot of people. I don't know if it's a disproportionate amount or not with Cantor. But now that you've mentioned it, it's something that I'm going to kind of be more keen to looking for. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. And you can log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Got some articles up there now, one on Victor Oladipo trying to adapt into the Thunder offense. And I'll have some more stuff. I'll have stuff up on the cuts on Monday whenever they come. Log on to normantranscript.com and check all that stuff out. Check out Thunder Road. That's my blog under the sports tab on the site. Real easy to find. That's going to do it for today. Season opener in Philly in 2 days. So close. I'm going to have a game preview with Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Locked On Sixers. That's going to be up on Wednesday morning. So you'll be able to just listen to that to preview the first game of the year. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.